Is from Exodus 17, and it's from verse 8. While the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek came to fight against them. Moses commanded Joshua, "Call the Israelites to take up arms and fight the army of Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did what Moses had commanded, and he led his men out to fight the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of a nearby hill. And as long as Moses held up the staff with his hands, the Israelites had advantage. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites gained the upper hand. Moses' arms finally became too tired to hold up the staff any longer. So Aaron and Hur found a stone for him to sit on. And they stood on each side, holding up his hands until sunset. As a result, Joshua and his troops were able to crush the army of Amalek. Then the Lord instructed Moses, "Write this down as a permanent record and announce it to Joshua. I will blot out every trace of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar, and he called it, "The Lord is my banner." He said, They have dared to raise their fist against the Lord's throne, so now the Lord will be at war with Amalek's generation after generation."
Thank you. Well, I hope today, well, actually, before I say anything else, I must say another thank you, actually. Thank you for having us, but thank you for those in this church and this church as a whole, you corporately, for the support that you give to Cribs. We could not do what we do without that, and I'm very aware that there are, both in terms of the support that the church gives and the support that many individuals give in all kinds of ways, it's that which keeps us going. So thank you is the first thing to say. The reading may not seem terrifically obvious in terms of connecting with what we do in schools day by day and week by week, but then you can always make it fit, can't you? Sorry, no, I didn't say that out loud. It's not quite as cynical as that. What I want us to do is to think about this theme of partnership. And I actually think in that reading, we have that illustrated quite vividly. But we need to kind of, in our minds, transport ourselves back to the days of the Exodus to understand a little bit about what's going on and to understand actually how this applies to us, to what we're doing as Cribs, to what you're doing as a church, to how we all work together to see God's purposes achieved and to see his kingdom come. This is the first time since the people of Israel have been taken out of Egypt that they've actually had to fight. So they've had all sorts of aggro on the way. Just immediately before this, there's the incident with lack of water and Moses strikes the rock and water comes out. And there's a really telling phrase, I think it's at the end of verse 7 of the chapter that we read, because it says they tested the Lord their God, asking, "Is the Lord among us or not?" So they got this far on their journey. They got out of Egypt. Now thinking, well, is God even with us? Is this just all some amazing fluke? It's a complete waste of time. Is this just actually a disaster and we might as well give up and go back? And then just at that moment, they get attacked by the Amalekites. And they have to fight their first battle. Now, it doesn't entirely make it clear in the bit we read, but if you cross-refer to Deuteronomy 25, it's a little insight that basically what happens is the Amalekites came. It says when the people were weary, when they were tired, they waited for them to come vulnerable, and then they picked off the stragglers at the rear. Which is why God is so incensed about this, because these are his people, and actually the Amalekites come and look for the weak and the vulnerable, the ones who are struggling, and go for them. And that explains some of what's going on here. And so the people then are obliged to go into battle, to protect the vulnerable ones amongst them. But how does it work? What I want us to think about is, in that context, how does it work? What do we learn here about partnership? I'm not going to say anything radically new, but I think there are some really helpful reminders here, because actually our work in Cribs, it's not in such obvious or dramatic way, but is about protecting the vulnerable, the ones who could get picked off in our society. And we do that by actually giving them the information about the gospel of Jesus so that they can respond to it. We do that by supporting those who are emotionally, behaviourally vulnerable. And there is an enemy who wants to pick off children and young people, make no mistake. And actually, our response as God's people should be to fight for them. And we can only do that in partnership. So I want to make three fairly obvious points about what that means. The first thing, it reminds us something about prayer. Because there you've got this very strange, this very bizarre incident, and before, you know, anyone tries and builds a whole theology around this, this is the only time in any of the battles, as far as I know, that Israel fights, that this happens. But it happens here, where the people are only winning the battle for as long as Moses is sitting there with his arm, or standing there initially and then sitting there with his arms in the air, in prayer effectively, raising his staff. As long as Moses held up his hands, the people were winning, it says in verse 11. When his hands were lowered, the advantage went to the Amalekites. This battle could not have been won except through prayer. And the battles that we are fighting in schools, day in, day out, week in, week out, cannot be won except through prayer. The battles that are going on in our country at the moment cannot be won except through prayer. Now we know it, don't we? There's a wonderful quote by a theologian called Walter Wink, which is just a good name, that's why I like saying it. But his line is this: history belongs to the intercessors. And if you believe that even a little bit, it should make you go all cold and shivery. History belongs to the intercessors. Do we genuinely believe that the prayers of God's people can alter what happens on Tuesday in Parliament? Because we should. History belongs to the intercessors. What an amazing privilege, awesome responsibility, ever so slightly scary if we're honest. But just as well that the Holy Spirit intercedes for us with words that can't be expressed, groans that words can't express, because when we get our prayers wrong, God sorts it out anyway. What a relief. But there is something about prayer. Now, the fact is, we need to get this. Whatever happens in the visible world, in classrooms, in staff rooms, in playgrounds, where we're working as Cribs, every victory is only possible because of the prayers of God's people. And I need to remind myself of that. I was thinking, as I was preparing this, about a couple that I worked with. It must be probably 15 years ago now, at least, when I was in pastoral ministry. And she'd become a Christian, then he became a Christian from a really hard-drinking, working-class Irish background. It was really difficult. There was all kinds of issues in the marriage. And it looked at one point as if the marriage was over. And they'd both not long become Christians. And I remember just feeling something about that and thinking, I've got to pray. And so I set aside a lunchtime every week when, instead of eating, I would pray for them. And the remarkable thing is that actually their marriage was saved. It was messy. Their relationship with the church was messy, but they moved out of the area. They're going on great. He got baptized, and God is at work in their lives still. Now, I'm not telling you this, believe me, to make me look super spiritual, because as I reflected on that, I thought, why is it the last time that happened was then? Why actually, in all the issues that I've faced pastorally in Cribs, has it never occurred to me that that might be a way of doing something about it? But actually, I've just tried to solve it on my own more often than not. And I'm sort of, so it's nothing like preaching to yourself, is there really? But we need to learn again that actually prayer is vital if we're going to see God's victory. But there's also a lesson in that as well about partnership, which is the theme of this whole tour. Now, I find this passage fascinating when you stop and think about it. Notwithstanding all that I've just said about the importance of prayer, who was more important for this battle to be won, Moses or Joshua? The answer is neither. Both. Who was more important, Aaron and Hur, who stood there and held Moses' hands up when he couldn't hold them up anymore, or the nameless soldiers who risked their lives fighting with Joshua? And I think the same answer applies. It's neither. This is partnership in action. You see, we can, you know, I think we sort of make up for our sort of lack of spirituality by spiritualizing these bits of the Bible, don't we? And we're saying it's all about prayer. No, it's not all about prayer. If Joshua hadn't been there in the valley fighting with all his men, Moses could have stood up there all day. As he did, it wouldn't have made a blind bit of difference, would it? This is about prayer and practicality going together. You know, Moses up there praying with his arms in the air with the staff of God, and we'll come on to that in a minute. Aaron and Hur holding his arms up, and Joshua in the valley fighting, all working together to see the victory that God wanted. And just another interesting little twist. I love it when God is gracious despite our silliness. Moses has got this great bit of spiritual bravado. I don't know if you've ever been this person or come across these kind of machismo Christians. You know, the kind of spiritual, yes, it's me, I'm going to win the world for Christ tomorrow morning. And I think there was a little bit of about that in Moses at this point. You know, I'm going to stand all day long. Now, he wasn't a young man. And you know what? He ends up sitting down. If you read the passage, he doesn't do what he said he's going to do. He ends up sitting down. He says he's going to stand, he ends up sitting down. Does it stop God working? No, it doesn't. I think that's amazing. You may never have noticed that. It's just one of those things that I thought was fascinating, because God is gracious and he knows our hearts. And it's not about machismo and self-promotion. It's about seeing God's purpose fulfilled. And all this is true, isn't it, for the work of Cribs? That actually, we've all got a part to play. Whether that's in prayer, in finance, in supporting events, in being there, in volunteering, in working in the classroom, in working with small groups of children, in mentoring. It's vast. There are so many different bits of it. And God's kingdom advances as we all do our little bit. Not as we try and do someone else's bit. You know, it would have been no good if Aaron and Hur had thought, oh, blow, it's not going too well down there. Sorry, Moses, I need to go and get my sword and help them out down in the valley. I imagine it must have been tempting. But that wasn't their role. Their role was to stand there in the rather unglamorous position of holding up an old man's arms. But that was what their role was in this partnership that God was using to see his kingdom come. And sometimes we don't get that. I was thinking again about 3 years ago, I had a sabbatical and I spent some time in a monastery, which was the most bizarre experience in all kinds of ways. And I went along to all the services that the monks did. And again, it was slightly weird, and I was quite out of my comfort zone for about two-thirds of the time. I came away from that thinking, these guys are living a life that is so unlike mine that it almost doesn't bear comparison. And they're living a life that, to the eyes of the world, looks useless and wasted. But I'm so grateful to God that there were even just half a dozen men who were prepared to waste their lives that way. Because they're praying day in, day out, in all kinds of different ways. And if God's called them to that, then great. Doesn't make sense to me, but then it doesn't have to. You know, God calls us all to do things to different parts of this partnership, and we need to do the bit that God has called us to, even when it doesn't make much sense. A final little reminder here is about the purpose of it all. And this is where we come on to Moses holding up the staff. It's called the staff of God in some versions. It's the staff that he struck the Red Sea with and it parted. And it then coincides with what he calls the altar that he builds, because it's called the Lord is my banner. Now, if you think about a battle, if you think even now about military regiments, they all have their standards, don't they? They all have their flags. And when any tribe or people went into battle in those days, they'd have had a standard that they would rally people to. They would have had a banner that actually was a sense of identity and a sense of motivation for the people as they fought. And God's people had a plain old stick, which I think is fascinating. Now, I think some of that is to do with what comes a couple of chapters later in the Ten Commandments. You shan't make any image of me, God says. So we don't need a picture. A stick's enough. Because if God is really the real God, the God who made the heavens and the earth, who spoke and galaxies and stars came into being, if that's who he is, any picture's going to be a bit rubbish, isn't it? So a staff, that's plenty good enough, thank you. So, but this is the point. This is their rallying point. This is what he's holding up. He's holding it up in prayer and he's saying, this is the God that we serve. The God who through this plain old staff has parted waters, who's brought water from a rock. That's the God we serve. It's a rallying cry to the people of God. The Lord is my banner. It's a bit like a football shirt, a football scarf. You know, it always makes me laugh when you go to a football match, particularly if you watch non-league football like I do, where it's not segregated and you're wandering around. And basically, some of the people who go there are a bit odd, but enough said, you know, self-included in that probably, and you sort of walk round and you bump into someone because you've got this weird, if you've never been to a non-league football match, the best thing is, whereas, you know, in normal football you stay in your seat, well, in the level I watch, you stand anyway mostly, and then at half-time everybody swaps ends. So you're always behind the goal of the team that you support. It's brilliant. So you're walking around the ground and you're looking people, and you're, what colour scarf has he got on? You know, is he going to be friendly? To be honest, they usually are. Usually, anyway. But you are sort of sizing people up by, well, what colour scarf has he got on? What's he wearing? Is he on the right side? And that's what this is about. This is about our identity. And that's linked to what our purpose is. You see, what we're doing in schools, the battle that we fight, isn't Cribb's battle. This is not ultimate. If this tour that we're doing becomes about Cribb's self-promotion, then we failed. Because actually the Lord is our banner. And we rally to his call. His call that actually no one gets left behind, to coin a phrase. That the vulnerable shouldn't be picked off, they should be protected. And that actually together we can see God's victory played out in our schools, even in 21st century Britain. So thank you for being part of that. I pray that we will continue to partner together to see that become a reality. Amen. Got a final little video, which is, it was our 25th birthday last year, and we are